Welcome to Let's Be Frank, the men's mental health podcast. Join us as we break the stigma, embrace vulnerability, and prioritize mental health in men. Together, let's use your voice. Guys, welcome back to Let's Be Frank, the home of men's mental health. Today, you're joining us as we are extremely excited to have the one and only George Coppin with us, a talented star in the acting scene, known for his remarkable performances, from pantomimes to hit Netflix films like The School for Good and Evil, and even joining Disney's Magical World with Willow on Disney+. George has left a lasting impression. Beyond his comedy talents, George has been an advocate for important issues relating to actors with dwarfism in the film industry. With his wit, he raises critical questions about casting practices, where roles traditionally meant for actors with dwarfism are given to others who have more opportunities, prompting him to address the quest for diversity and his impact on mental health in the acting world. Join us for this thought-provoking discussion behind the curtains with George Coppin, actor, comedian, and advocate for change. Today is going to be a very, very exciting episode, and we are absolutely stoked to have him with us. But like, as always, we're going to jump on to Mr. Ryan Smith. Ryan, welcome, mate. I know this is a good friend of yours, and you've been extremely excited to jump on tonight and record.
Good friend. I'd say more of an acquaintance. No, we don't like each other, not one bit. You know, it's absolutely brilliant that George has took the time out to discuss, some stuff that's happened in the past week. But obviously we're here about mental health and stuff as well. George, I am absolutely sort of humbled that you're here, you know, the huge Hollywood actor that you are. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, lads. Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here. It's nice to see you again, Ryan. It's been a while.
It certainly has, hasn't it? You know, it was out of the blue that I dropped you a message the other day, but it was just all
that dick pic was disgusting.
And tiny. You have to mate, zoom.
This is a family show. No, it's not.
Yeah, a few times.
So. I said on that episode the other week. Did I say it on that episode with Phil Green the other week where I did a bit of stand up comedy and stuff? I did a lot of
comedy. Well, we worked out it was
saw George and stuff, but we did a few comedy writing sessions together. and his jokes were as funny as they were then, not very.
Shots are getting fired.
Shots fired.
That was only like 2 minutes yet.
You're glad this is over Zoom, because I would so be whacking you right now. Your tiny cock.
It's one of them comedy scenes, isn't it, in sort of The Simpsons, where the clown actor's trying to be funny, but he's not.
Yeah, but then you fucked off, so we all got funny.
Winning, mate. He's winning.
Bring it, mate. Bring it. Let's go.
Well, George, tell us about you. I want to know.
Let's move on. Swiftly on.
I want to know about kind of you outside of the acting and the comedy. Who is George Coppin?
I'm a very sociable person. I love nothing more than going out with my mates. I've actually been with them today all day. I like going out just to the pub on a Friday, Saturday night, you know, having a few drinks. And that's always been me, a very confident, very sociable person. I never let anything, especially my height, get in the way. I use it to my advantage. Especially my comedy, with my acting, with how I act with people. Because I know, no matter what job I'm in, no matter what I do or say, I'm going to go outside and get stared at by kids. I'm going to get pointed at. There's nothing I can physically do to change that. So it's like I've just got to own it and ride with it. And like I'm one of those people who don't notice it. So like, for example, my sister, because my whole family's dwarfs, you see. My sister, when she goes out in public, she'll notice everyone staring, everyone pointing, every single word said, whereas me, it's just water off my back, you know. My mates have said to me, oh God, did you hear what that idiot just said to you? I'd be like, no, what did he say? Well, because it just washed it over me, you know.
Do you have anyone that, with a quick one on that, like, so with me and my kids, I like to kind of educate them. So Have you had any families come up to you and just try and explain to their kids, you know, what dwarfism is, or ask you questions, or is it kind of just a point and shoot sort of thing? Because obviously my kids haven't met someone with dwarfism, but I'd like to think in that opportunity I'd be able to take my kids up and go, you know, I do apologize, but can you explain it to them so they can learn, and then they're not growing up with that, like, oh, let's just point and laugh, because it's not nice, it's not respectful, it's not human. Do you know what I mean? Like, just be nice and curious. And if you don't know about it,
well, most of the time it's in like queues. Well, most of the time it's in like a queue for something when the kid will ask them, and the most common reply they get is the parents just going, oh, everyone's born different, you know, that's just how he's born, he's just born small, like, you're born like this, you're born a boy, you're born a girl, he's just born differently, everyone's like that. And then they kind of move on. But I don't think parents aren't sure going, can we talk about it in front of them? Do I have to like shush them up? It's like, no, like, I'm more than happy for them to ask me questions. And sometimes the kids will just ignore the parents or just come up to me and go, why are you small? So I'll just explain, like, going, oh yeah, I'm a dwarf, you know. So obviously if I go deep into it, the kid will look at me going, the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. So I have to like try and put it in a kid's way, you know. But thankfully a lot of adults, it's got better, like, a view. Like, years ago, I think the parents would be like, no, 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 don't look at him, don't, like, let's go, let's move. But now they're like, no, 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 let's talk about it. They want to educate their kids. I think sometimes parents think, I didn't get the education, get educated about disabled people, but I want my kids and grandkids to have that education about them. So, yeah, it's just mainly that answer. And then, especially grandparents will talk to me more openly than parents do for whatever reason.
No, it's really, you know, it's really insightful, that is. And obviously, I know you a little bit, you know, I'll say it a little bit personally. That sounds a bit...
That's it, never hide joke.
Right, no, but, you know, I've been privileged enough to be able to get to know you and whatnot. And a couple of things, you know, we'll use the word dwarfism, but you're quite happy to use the term dwarf. Now, some people turn around and say, oh, you can't say dwarf and stuff like that. But, do you actually find that a derogatory statement? Or is it, for me, it's just a shorter version of dwarfism. So,
again, another hype joke. Yeah. Thanks.
Right, yeah, like, it.
Everyone, like, in my world has their own favourite or own preference, should I say. Like, for example, I don't mind being called a dwarf, whereas someone like my mum prefers being called someone with dwarfism. Right, you know, okay. So it's each to their own. But for majority of us, the one word we hate, and it'll be the only time I ever say it, is the word midget. It's basically our N-word, and people wonder why. And it's basically refers back to the days when dwarfs were used in circus, when they were thrown about, when they were used more as props than actors and part of the show. They were like almost put in the cupboard for storage, you know. That's what it refers back to. And a lot of people don't understand that. But yeah, I have friends... I know dwarfs who don't mind the N-word, so it's like, fair enough, you know, each to their own. But yeah, so it's like dwarf or someone with dwarfism or a little person, you know, or someone with restricted growth, you know, there's loads that are acceptable.
That's a mouthful if you've had a drink, isn't it? Somebody with restricted growth.
I struggle with dwarfism, mate. Must someone actually,
it always seems to be drunk people that want to know everything.
Yeah, it will be. And do you know what, though, as well? Like, I didn't know the reason behind the N-word. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know that backstory. And again, the people that are listening, I guarantee a lot of them didn't know the referencing behind the N-word. And it's all education. And that's what we bring to the podcast, is how to educate people. And, you know, that's why it's great to have you on, so we can educate people. And we don't know, but we could, as we said off air a minute ago, we could well have a large audience with people suffering with dwarfism that and now could listen to yourself and go, oh, bloody hell, that guy's done fucking amazing. And it gives them someone to kind of listen to as well. And that's what we want to bring, that everyone's, you know, welcome, and everyone needs to be heard, and everyone has a story to tell. That's the main thing. So how have you found then? So how have you found has your dwarfism ever kind of impacted your life where you've kind of gone, I'm pissed off that I'm I've got dwarfism, or have you kind of, because you seem quite relaxed around it, as to go like, yeah, this is me, happy with that, absolutely bob on, you know, I can go and smash the world. Has there ever been a point where you've gone, do you know what, I've lost that particular, I don't know, role, job, or I can't, is there anything that's kind of, you've gone, fuck's sake, why me?
I've always proud to be a dwarf, you know, it's one of the best things that ever, well, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I've made friends through being a dwarf that I wouldn't have if I was average height. But the one thing that does annoy me, obviously apart from people's attitudes, and it annoys every dwarf I know, is shopping. Because whatever we need is on the top shelf, and there is no one ever about. And you're thinking, if I was just that bit taller, I would be able to get this and have no problem. But you've got to wait like 10 minutes for some random dude to come down and just go, mate, can you pass us the baked beans down? I've been waiting there for like 20 minutes. I'm really hungry. I want to go home. I just want me baked beans. Just, you know.
But sorry, mate. I shouldn't be thinking this, but I'm thinking that Lidl, they've got trolleys, my ideal for you, ain't they? You've got trolleys ideal for you in Lidl, haven't you? Sorry, no, mate.
Lidl's the worst one. Me and my mum went to Lidl a few weeks ago, and the tills at Lidl are like twice the height of me. Me and my mum looked at it and went, oh, for fuck's sake. And the security guard, we could see it. You could see the security guard going, I can't do anything. And I really want to help him, and I can't. And he was trying to look around going, any way I can help you? Yeah, there's the self-checkout. Let me take you to the self-checkout. Or let me get your basket on for you. And he's like, what the fuck?
I'll tell you something. Yeah. If I walk down Tesco and look down an aisle and see George on the ladder, I'm going to be pissing myself, mate. I just think it'd be fucking amazing. That's the best advert ever.
No, what I do, I've learnt to climb the shelves. No, I climb the shelves. Now I do. Because especially if like one of the bottom ones empty, I just get climb up a few. And you can see a few people walking down going, what the fuck? There's a dwarf climbing the shelves. And they go, do you want me to help you? I'm like, no, I'm almost there now. I've climbed this high. I'm not going
to. It took me 2 hours to get to this.
Yeah. I'm not stopping now.
This is my Everest.
Yeah. And then I just get to the top, get the item, like, Mum, I want you to do a trust fall with me.
You're going to catch me.
Yeah. Then
have you not actually thought about going in a Spider-Man outfit?
No, not yet. I might have to.
I think it'll be a good one for you, mate. No.
Yeah, that won't spread round like YouTube wildfire. Channel, mate.
That's talking money, that is. Big money.
TikTok videos, mate. I'll be a...
Yeah.
It's my idea. I'll go 50 with you.
But to give a serious answer on that question, I've been nights out where, for whatever reason, I'm not in a good mood for whatever's happened that day. And I just, for some reason, get loads of stares and loads of drunk comments. And it's like, fuck's sake, you know, just tonight I can just do without all this crap. Just click a button, just be average height, you know, so I can walk into a place and it'd be absolutely fine, especially if it's a crowded pub as well. Because it's like, there's no chance I'm getting served at this pub. You know, and so I have to like find one of my mates, because most of my mates I hang out with are tall. So I said, great, just get us a drink, would you? I literally cannot get to this bar. And it's ridiculous. Even if I do manage to get to the front, no one can see me. And the amount of times this always happens, where I'm at a till or I'm at a bar, and the woman serving will look up to the person behind me. I'm like, hello, I'm down here, love. And like, people don't even think to look down. They just look straight in their direction, in their eye line. It's like, hello. It's like, crap. And sometimes the person behind me's not even noticed me at all, either. Started to go, oh, yeah, can I have this? I'm like, I'm literally right in front of you. Like, do you need a whack in the bollocks for me to you to notice me?
Do you know what? I think that might be a new tactic for you, mate. You know, just,
what do you mean,
just,
new?
Yeah, just think to yourself, oh, I didn't see you there, like you didn't see me type thing. I think that might be the way forward and whatnot. But, you know, in all seriousness, what I want to do, though, is kind of, you know, you kind of answered that. And I want to touch a little bit on recent news. And I only want to talk about this briefly, but I want to talk about acting and sort of roles and things like that. And I know you've been in, you know, a few things and stuff. But recently there's been some, you know, with Disney bringing up Snow White, you know, the roles that are traditionally played, you know, pantomimes by dwarfs, And then obviously, you know, previous renditions of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Willy Wonka, whatever you want to call it. And obviously this new sort of prequel that's coming out with Hugh Grant playing an Oompa Loompa. How has that kind of affected your mindset with, do you think, well, what's the point? Or do you think, do you know what, this gives me more drive to go forwards? Do you, where
bit of both, really. I know that sounds like a weird answer, but it's a bit of like, I need to make a point. I need to make a statement to stop this. And like the feedback I've had has been mostly positive, and the comments I've had from people have been really nice, saying, oh, thank you for putting your voice out there. You're making a change. Thank you for speaking out on our behalf, and thank you for being you and getting your point across, being loud, because the louder you are, the more people will listen. Because a lot of people might just watch and go, well, my voice don't make a difference. It does. If I've learned anything this week, it's one opinion can spread like wildfire, because I was not expecting my opinion on this to go as viral as it has, because I just did one interview for Radio Derby, then suddenly main BBC News have picked it up, and ITV News have picked it up, and then bang, every news outlet around the world picked it up. I got a text message from a friend the other day with a YouTube link. I was on the news in New Delhi, for God's sake. It's like, wow, this is mental. It's like, yeah, this is now gone a bit, like at the beginning I was like, yeah, more. And now I'm like, yeah, okay, this has gone a tiny bit too far. Like, a bloke in Norway wants a video, which I may have to say no to, even though I've been waiting, making him wait a while. But it's like, yeah, this is just getting bananas. And I've actually started to get spotted for it. I was in shopping, was it yesterday? No, not yesterday. Friday or Thursday. I'd just been on the local news the night before. And a bloke said, oh, I saw you on the news. Brilliant. Well done. It's like, I'm getting recognised now. And I was out yesterday visiting an old friend at the Tramway Museum near where I live. And there was a queue. And again, the kid in front of me, to reference back to previous questions, was saying to his grandparents, oh, why is he small and all that? And a woman said, oh, you know, everyone's born different. It's like that guy that was on the radio, you know, talking about how dwarfs are. And then she turned to me and went, oh, you're not an entertainer, are you? I went, yeah, that was me on the radio. And she looked at me and just go, sorry, what? I went, talking about Hugh Grant. She went, yeah. I went, yeah, that was me. And she looked at me and just go, what are the chances of that? Yeah. What? Yeah.
Massive. And so how does that kind of, you know, you think to yourself in roles like that, I mean, I can't really talk. This is why I want to get you on, because I want to know what your headspace is. How does it actually make you feel inside when you see actors that could easily get pretty much their pick of movie roles? You know, Hugh Grant is a massive pulling power, you know, in that name alone. Yeah. How does that actually make you feel inside to think, do you know what?
Yeah, it just makes me feel...
I could have done something with that.
Yeah, it does make me feel a bit crap. It's like, thanks. And like, you're like wanting to push us, all of us, out of this industry that we love. You know, this is a job, this is a career we all want. This is a job we all want. And you're basically saying, oh, you can't have a voice anymore. You can't be on screen anymore. We're like almost ashamed of you. So you just go in that little corner. Yeah, you just go in that corner and we'll just carry on having fun, being the big stars in the main room, you know. It's like, no, I don't want to feel like that, you know. And it's like, especially with this job, with acting, because how it works is they've got to ring my agent, who then rings me. So they have to come to me rather than I go to them. And quite a few days, because I can't do anything about it, quite a few days I wake up just, and the first thought in my head will be like, you're going nowhere fast in life. And it's like, and to put it bluntly, that's not a thought that fucks off quickly, you know. That weighs heavy on my mind all day. And it's like, well, yeah, I'm not going anywhere in life quickly. And I can't do anything. I feel... I'm stuck, because basically they've shut, because I've always argued, my main argument has always been with this story, we should be getting offered the main roles, like what Hugh Grant gets, you know, your everyday roles in your soaps, in your dramas, in your rom-coms, you know, but we're not getting those, so they've kind of like shut one door on us, but forgot to open the next, well, so yeah, we're now stuck in this limbo going, what do we do?
But then it's like, again, in the quest for diversity, you know, and I find myself, I do want to explore this with you, but I don't want to make it about this.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, in the quest for diversity, you know, you look at this Snow White that Disney have done, and roles, again, like I said, traditionally played by dwarfs, or, you know, actors with dwarfism and stuff. has been kind of given to a diverse array of people. You know, everybody's entitled to be, you know, to get their, you know, their art out there, because that's what it is there. But by, you know, by actually creating this environment where we're trying to be so diverse, we're actually going back in time and shutting the doors on actors like yourself and you know, you sharing your art and stuff. You know, for me, I think of, you know, actors with dwarfism, I automatically think Peter Dinklage. I automatically think Warwick Davis and whatnot. And these are actors that have made it, but they're such a small part of what the industry is for you guys. You know, it's heartbreaking.
But yeah, like everyone, if you say, as you just said, if you say to anyone, think of dwarf actors, it's those two. And yeah, they've made it in life, but what they've done is they've got up the ladder and then taken the ladder away. So us lot are at the bottom going, guys, we still need that ladder, please. We like, but especially Peter Dinklage, because he said, like, in regards to Snow White, I've said I'm not going to say any comment on that film until I see a trailer, until I see footage. Because everyone's made the same mistake with the leaked photo. Yeah. Everyone said, oh, it's the seven dwarfs. They went, count the people. There's nine people in that photograph.
And that's fair enough. And,
yeah,
and
no one's counted the people.
I'm quite happy for me to be put right in things like that. You know, it's like I say, I've only seen what's in the media and stuff. And you're quite right, you know, until there's footage out there, then let's stay shum. So, you know, I want to say thanks for highlighting that. And I really do appreciate that. You know, because this is what the show is. It is education and stuff. And I've not thought, I'm not actually counting.
I think a lot of people do that, though. Yeah. A lot of people have kind of seen the photo. And again, we're human. We jump to speculations and we shouldn't. But it has happened before. I'm just sat here, like, as I'm listening to you, just thinking back to films. Obviously, you had The Huntsman. Obviously, they were played, like, had the visual faces and that. So I think it was like Rob Brydon. The guy from Shaun of the Dead, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But there is, when is it then? There has to be, obviously, nowadays, they literally go, right, we're going to do a film, and they have to tick every single freaking box because someone will say something. But when does it come down? Excuse me.
Yeah.
When does it come down to the actual acting? So how does it work in that sense? So, if, like, obviously, you've done some great stuff. How does it work with regards to the acting side? So for me, okay, you know, Hugh Grant's playing this role. Well, if he's playing that role, is it because out of all the casting members, he was the best? Or is it because he is a bigger name? Like, what? When is it? There has to be a balance, surely.
Mm. Well, like, I do get, if it's a huge crowd of dwarfs, let's say in extras, like as goblins or gnomes, what we usually play, I'll sometimes just get put forward for it without having to do anything. But then every now and again, I do have to do an audition, something called a self-tape audition, which is all done at home. One of the worst things ever, because it's literally you and whoever's recording you, you've got to say a few lines. And if I'd had the audition for Numpa Lumpa and not got it, I would be going, yep, fair enough, you know, I didn't get the audition. Whoever did, they clearly were better than me, that's absolutely fine, move on. But because we didn't even get a choice, like, as far as, like, I keep saying, I've only seen the trailer, so I've got no idea if, A, there's other Oompa Loompas in the film, and B, if they are played by dwarfs. If it turns out there's other Oompa Loompas played by dwarfs, and Hugh Grant's just the main one, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Bit weird that Hugh Grant's the main one, but okay, there are dwarfs in it playing Oompa Loompas. But people forget it's our choice, you know. We've always got a voice. Like, I've been offered jobs in the past where I've gone, nah, I'm good, thanks, and turned it down. And it's like, I saw an old friend of mine yesterday who's a panto director who I've just worked with in Lichfield, and he says people moan at him when they do Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, going, oh, why are you getting dwarfs? And he goes, because they want to be here. We didn't force them. They want this career. They want this job. Yeah. It's like, we didn't go out on the streets and went, you, dwarf, come with me. Now dance, monkey, dance! You know, it's always my choice. And I love panto. Panto is always my favourite job of the year. And if someone said to me, someone said to me, can you come and do panto all year round for me? I'd bite their hand off. That'd be my dream job. Like, it's hard work, don't get me wrong, but I absolutely love it. And like when I first put my post out, somebody who I thought was a friend called me selfish for doing panto. I'm like, no, I'm not. How dare you? How dare you call me selfish for doing a job I love? Just because you don't like it doesn't mean I don't have to like it. Like, for example, I've got other dwarf friends who get hired out for the stag dudes and hen dudes. They dress as Oompa Loompas and leprechauns. I'm not up against those events, but I have nothing wrong with my friends doing them. If that's what they want to do and they enjoy it, that's absolutely fine. All I ask is you don't get me involved, you know? But then people shouldn't be able to say, no, you can't do that because I disagree. And that's what, like in 2023, you can't seem to have an opinion without someone having a go at you.
And that's what I find, I find upsetting that, you know, a lot of people in this world, they go, do you know what? I'm offended on that other person's behalf.
Yeah.
I'm offended, you know, I find that cultural appropriation is one of my favourites. Well, have you actually spoke to the somebody from that culture and said, you know, have you got their thought? Don't be offended on somebody else's behalf. I just find that, you know, a little bit derogatory to the individuals. Let's move on now, and I want to talk about anything coming up. Have you got any sort of gossip? Have you got any sort of films that you're working on at the moment, or? Do you know what I still haven't seen is where you play Cupid.
Oh, you need to. It's a great film. Yeah. Obviously, because of the actor's strike in America, it's kind of paused everything over here. So there's nothing going on at the minute. And this year, me and all my other friends say this year's just been absolute crap for work. Like, since Panto, I've done one job, which was it was on this little film, no pun intended, of something I've been involved in since before COVID. Me and my dad did it. And it's basically this dark, twisted version of Snow White. So instead of us rescuing her and kidnapping her, rescuing her and saving her, we kidnap her and abuse her. You know? It's called Snowfall. I think it's going to be out next year, hopefully. And it's basically two students of the London Film School. And as I said, we did it just before lockdown, then lockdown happened, but then they graduated. They still wanted to do the film. So it's like, me, my dad, who's an actor as well, and another friend of ours, and then there was only about five of us filmed for about a week in London, which was good fun. We knew the other dwarf. They always say in the world of actors and dwarfs, you either know a dwarf actor or you know of them. You know, like the amount of jobs I've gone to and I've pretty much known everyone. It's like, yeah, good to see you again. And you, it's like when me and my dad did the TV series of Willow, which if you want to watch it, good luck. It's not on Disney Plus anymore. They took it off. It was just after lockdown, and it was really nice because it was the first time a load of us had seen each other in like 2 or 3 years. So it was a proper big reunion.
That's annoying with that, because I haven't had the ability or the opportunity to watch that yet. And it is actually something probably in the past 6 months that I've actually wanted to watch with me and the missus and the kids and that. But again, it's had time to come around to it.
Well, you didn't miss much.
Right, okay. So, right then. So, I've never watched the original. I've never watched any of it, so I don't know the story. So 30 seconds, sum it up.
Well, the TV series, me and my dad watched the first 2 episodes, and I kid you not, one thing happened. In 2 episodes, one thing happened. It was so slow, and we just went, right, we've seen our scenes, we're happy, we're sorted, you know. And I think for my dad, it was actually really good being in the TV series, because my dad was in the original Willow. So to be in the original and then pop up again in the TV series, it was good. And because of the main film, there's 5 grandkids, 2 of them being my dad's, you know, because of this film. So I think it does mean a lot to my dad. But yeah, the TV series was absolute garbage.
Yeah, no, I don't want to talk about people that aren't in the room and whatnot now, but your dad's been in Star Wars as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, my dad's an Ewok in Star Wars Return of the Jedi. That's how I got into the acting business, because of him. And he kept in touch with, because he stopped in the 90s when he met my mum and had me and my sister, but he kept in touch with a lot of his friends. So I've like grown up around him being an Ewok, around people that I know being in Harry Potter and stuff. It's just, that's normal to me, you know. And then I left school and I thought, I'll sign up for this agency. And I'd had a load of friends do panto, saying, oh, you need to do panto, it's brilliant. I went, yeah, okay, I'll do panto, see what it's like. You know, if I don't like it, I won't do it again. If I like it, you know. So that was in 2017, was in Middlesbrough. Best job I've ever had. Absolutely loved it. Remember, like, getting to the end of the first week and going, like, this is just still rehearsals, going, I want to do this every Christmas. This is just absolutely brilliant. And fantastic. It gave, because the first time I'd moved away from home for an extended period of time, it was like 6 weeks with a few of the other guys in this house, and it gave me the confidence I never knew I needed. Like, I was always a confident person, but it just gave me way more in myself to go, I can do this. I can be on stage performing in front of hundreds of people. And it gave it, I grew up a bit over Panto. You know, my family may argue against that point, but it's like, I've always loved Panto because for me, it's my time away from my family, away from my friends, my time to be me, grow up, learn a few new things, you know.
No, it's good. And have you found, I want to move to your sort of your comedy side now, because that's how I know you through the Derby Comedy Writers Club. Not that I was that funny and, you know, that's why I retired from comedy. But, you know, have you found that has been able for you to switch into comedy? Because I know being on stage, you know, instead of like 10 of you being on stage, there's one of you and it's like focused on you. Do you find that affects with your mental health differently? Do you find that play, you know, you have to be a different person? How does that work?
Well, it's actually through the Panto I got into comedy, because basically one day the woman playing Snow White brought her little girl on stage, was about two at the time or whatever, and I just happened to say, oh, finally there's somebody shorter than I am, you know. Got a massive laugh from the cast, and this bloke who was playing the dame, a lovely bloke called Sean Prendergast, came over to me and he said, George, can you do me a favour when Panto's finished? I went, yeah, sure, what? He went, become a comedian. I went, you what? And it was like one of those things I'd always had in the back of my mind. But you know, it's like those pipe dreams we all have, going, oh, in another life I could have done this. But he went, yeah, you need to become a comedian. And everyone in the cast got wind of it and went, yeah, George, you need to do it. You're so funny. You're naturally funny. I went, okay, yeah, go on then. So I finished Panto and I looked online. I found a 6-week course in London run by a bloke called Logan Murray. It was really handy because I was filming a Disney Plus film called Artemis Fowl at the time. So I was filming during the week. I was filming during the week, then doing this workshop at the weekend. And yeah, I did my first gig, first 5 minutes. And again, like Panto, I came off stage going, I want to do more of that, you know. That was just mad. And the audience, obviously, I'm used to it because of Panto. And it is quite nice being the only one, because in Panto, if you cock up, there's other people to save you. Whereas if comedy is almost a challenge, going, yeah, you can cock up a bit and make it work. Not like theatre, let's say, not like the West End. And in comedy, I've got way more control over it, because it's my jokes, it's said how I like it, it's written how I like it. I know it's on what I want to do. Obviously, the only thing I don't control is how long I'm doing. But it's like I have way more control over it. And I'm more used, because I do it more frequently than the acting. And the buzz you get from a brilliant gig, oh, it's electric. Like, to come off stage and you're feeling electric, and I love this. There's nothing beats it.
Kind of high. Have you had any bad shows? Have you had any shows where it's gone, like, fuck, that went completely fucking wrong, that did? And, like, obviously, you're learning for every show and new material and seeing what kind of works. Like, how was that kind of...
Yeah.
Firstly, how was the very first show you'd done? And then secondly, have you had any like bad shows where it's just gone wrong?
Yeah, I've had bad shows. I've had a few that I'll talk about. So last night, for example, I was in Doncaster and it was a paid gig, because I'm starting to break into paid work, which I'm really happy with. And the guy, already I was a bit apprehensive about this gig because the MC was also the headliner, which I'd never heard of before. I'd heard of the MC being the opening act sometime, but never the headliner. I was thinking, okay, how's this going to go, you know? Got there, it's like this working men's club. I was thinking, okay, let's see how this goes. I was on first, and the lighting just wasn't working for whatever reason. So I went on stage with this really fucked up lighting, and I don't think that helped the audience. And then there was a table in front of me that was just chatting throughout. And I was tempted, but I didn't. But I was just wanting to go, shut the fuck up! You know, I'm trying to perform here. And it's like some jokes I do, which I know knock it out of the park, we're getting a few laughs. It's like, oh, thanks, you know? And it's like, oh, and you can see the whole night, the guy clearly booked us because he wanted a comedy night more than they wanted a comedy night, you know? But yeah, I've done gigs where the audience has just been split, like separate. So you'll have like two people over there, three people there, five people there. It's like, no, because it really takes it away. But I think for me, one of my personal worst ones of it is earlier this year, I did the Leicester Comedy Festival and I did my own show, which I've got. And the first night I did it, I had genuine audience member, one bloke. And about three friends who and I knew from who are also comedians. One bloke who worked for the company that put the show on, and one dude. And he was, it wasn't like he was a laugher, he was just a, yeah. He was more of a nodder. So I was supposed to do this hour's worth of comedy. I think got through it in like half an hour because I hated it. And like the next day, I remember having it on my mind all the time, and it didn't, I just had a shit day the next day because of that, because I just couldn't get it out of my head. And comedians, as general, we tend to remember the bad gigs a lot more than remember the good gigs, you know. The good gigs, yeah, we'll get at a high afterwards. But then when we crash, because I've had a few gigs where absolutely brilliant, I've had been on a proper high, been on a high the next day, I've been up here, and then you're like, oh crap, now I've got the blues, you know, I want a gig, and I've not got another gig for like a week or two. And especially when you apply for gigs and you don't get any, no one's getting back to you, and then you see all your mates gigging and saying, oh, we've done this gig, we've done that gig, you're thinking, crap, okay, why can't I get those gigs, you know, what am I not doing that I should be doing to get these gigs and to get more gigs? And a comedian is always their own worst enemy, and a gig always goes differently to what we remember. Like, I've done gigs when I've come off stage going, it was okay, you know, I could have done better, I could have done worse, watched a video back and gone, wow, that actually went a lot better than I remember, you know. I don't remember laughing that much in that bit. I don't even remember any laughter in that bit, and there is laughter, you know. So for some reason we're always getting in our own heads, and especially because we do the same material most nights, we're going, oh yeah, but is that joke any funnier? Is that joke still funny? Is it still going to work? And then, oh, but there's nothing worse, and every comedian's had this, where you write a joke and you think, oh, this is brilliant, this is absolutely going to hit out of the park, it's one of the best jokes I've ever written. You do it on stage, you're thinking, well, shit, you know, I really like that joke, and now I've got to get rid of it, because no one likes it. But yeah, so that can play with your mental health a bit, going, wait, is it me? Is it them? Who is it?
Be like, there must be an aspect of the comedy side that you do that can be, as you say, very mentally challenging, because you're always trying to like outdo yourself in a sense. You're always, you know, you're, if you've got, you know, four of you,
yeah,
on for the one show, you're always comparing yourself then to how your show went to how that comedian went. It's not the same, but it's a little bit similar. 100%. That I compare myself to the job I work in. There's a guy that does the same role as me. He's been doing it for like 15 years. I've been doing it for like a year, and I'll compare myself to him going like, why am I not getting the sales he's getting? Why am I not doing this that he's doing? And it's like, well, hang on a minute. He's done 15 fucking years. Like, he's got the experience. He's got the time under his belt. Like, that's why. And all I can do is just try and improve myself little by little, you know, just real slow progress in that, and then get to that point. And then when I'm at that point, there'll be someone behind me that's going, fucking hell, I wish I was as good as him. And it's that mindset we have where we're always trying to almost try and get something that's out of reach the whole time. Like, there's always that little bit too far that you're like, oh, that's what I want. That's what I want. I'm going to get there.
But something that's really helped, with me and my mental health is the community. Like, I've got a group chat on Facebook with some other comedians. There's loads of us, and we're always supporting each other. There's no, like, obviously, we know a few comedians that are bitchy and, you know, just want to slag people off. But you get that in any line of work, whatever life you live, you're going to get people like that. But this group chat has got people like Alex Lee, Katie, yeah, Brown, Dan Live, Denzel DeCristo, just to name a few. You know, we're all really supportive. And if we always go, oh, guys, I've got this new joke, can you see what it's like? And we'll give, like, constructive criticism, going, oh, that's really funny, but try twisting it this way, try... And we never go, oh, I want that joke. It's like, no, this is... And sometimes we've gone, oh, I've just thought of a new bit for you. Here you go. This is like, and we give it to them. And like, it's, that can really help, especially when we do a gig with them. If you do a gig with people you know, obviously it is nice to, and I do like it sometimes to do a gig where I don't know anybody else on the bill. It is obviously meeting new people, seeing new styles of comedy. But if you do a gig with your friends and you smash it, like they will just be, and they'll be like praising you all on Facebook and in message going, wow, thank you. You know, that means everything, you know, getting people's, because as comedians, that's what we want more than anything, is people's approval, people's appraisal, you know. And like the biggest, when if you're a comedian, the biggest compliment you can get is what, an applause break. So when people are clapping your joke, and you've got to physically stop speaking so they can stop laughing and stop clapping, you're thinking, yeah, I'm stopping because you love it so much, you know. And I've done gigs, there used to be in Derby a comedy club called Ruffle, it's closed now, but it was brilliant. I did it like every other week, I'll go there for the two nights, and it was brilliant because that crowd were there for comedy, you know. Like Ryan will be able to say, we've done gigs in pubs where people just want to have a pint and a pack of crisps, they don't give a shit about you.
No.
You know,
no,
you're interrupting their night. Whereas this place, it was they were there for you. And I think I did one night where in the first 5 minutes of my 20-minute set, I had two applause breaks. It was like, fucking hell, this is brilliant. And like, I did a weekend, it was with Alex Liam. So on the Friday, we had a brilliant audience. We both said, oh, if the audience is like this tomorrow night, we'll be happy, you know. Then the Saturday night audience was way better. It was like, jeez, you know. I like, you can't get much better than that. Applause breaks, people coming up afterwards going, oh, you're brilliant. And a few weeks ago, me and Alex were having a few drinks in Derby. And like, we did this gig in January, so this is about like June time. And two women came up to us, went, are you comedians? Went, yeah. I went, oh, we watched you once in a Ruffle back in January. Remember you, you're really funny. Like, wow, thank you. You know, you remember 6 months ago us performing and you us being funny. And those random comments like that just go, I'm really happy now. And I remember I was just starting out as a comedian. I'd just done this about 5-10 minutes at this event that my friends were organising. And so the next day I was in town with my friends and this car was pulled up next to me and unwound the window, went, you're a comedian, aren't you? Went, yeah. Went, oh, I watched you last night. You're brilliant. I just thought I'd say hello. Like, oh, thank you so much. And my friends turned around, just had this biggest smile on my face going, that's what I've been waiting for. You know, I've got a fan, you know. And people are always messaging me going, oh, when's your next gig? I really want to see your gig. I really, please let me know when you're nearby. I really want to watch you perform, you know.
I kind of want to, you know, I don't want to close it because I'm love listening to kind of your points of view and your story and stuff. But I just kind of want to touch now a little bit about advocating. So beyond advocating for like actors with dwarfism, you know, do you see any other areas in the entertainment industry where there is a lack of sort of representation and steps that can be taken to sort of address the issues and stuff?
I'm not sure, really. I think it's just mainly acting. Like, I can't remember which interview I said it in, but there should have been someone on the Wonka set that at some point should have gone, hang on a minute, something about this ain't right. Like, films need almost a disability coordinator to go, right, yeah, you're doing this right, you're doing that right, but that needs a bit of tweaking, that needs a bit of tweaking. Do it like this and you'll be absolutely fine. Now, obviously, I know not everyone's going to be happy with the end result. You know, if they'd used the dwarf to play an Oompa-Loompa, some other dwarfs would have been in uproar, but those dwarfs that would have been in uproar aren't in the entertainment world. Those are the people that are having a go at me that aren't in the entertainment world, so aren't seeing it from our point of view. So don't get why we're moaning. They're going, oh, you just want to be stoked. Typecast, you just want to make people laugh at us. Like, no, read what I'm putting, you idiot.
Do you find that difficult then, you know, when you kind of you put yourself, you know, into the spotlight, you know, you intentionally put yourself into the spotlight, and then you're getting other people with dwarfism and stuff turning around to you and saying, and like I said earlier as well about people that are getting offended on your behalf, so to speak, does that kind of get to you, sort of your mental health, when you think, well, am I actually doing the right thing here, or should I be doing this?
But then it's like, then I see that that's like one comment in pile of other really good ones, but yet, like, going back to the comedy, that one comment is the one you remember. Like, you could have hundreds and thousands of people saying they love you, but for one person to say, oh, this joke was shit, and that'll be the one bit that sticks in your mind. It's always going to be like that. But it did actually make me laugh, because that's what I want, like, to do with stuff like this. I'll just laugh at it. Like, one woman put on, like, really having a go at me, So I deleted the comment and blocked her on, and removed her from Facebook. And then her mum had a go at me, saying, oh, you're getting rid of free speech just because she disagreed with you. And I replied to her, going, she tried to get rid of my free speech, saying I was wrong. And I removed her because I'm going to be posting more about the story in the next few days, and she won't want to see it. So I removed her to help her. So why am I the bad guy? You know, and she never replied to that. So I think she must have got rid of them and went, yeah, right, he's right, but I don't want to admit it. And like another dwarf post to put on had a go at me. But yeah, thankfully, a load of comedians, a load of my other friends backed me up and said, read what George has put. You're just jumping on a bandwagon saying he wants to do all these roles, but he's not saying that. He's saying he wants to do everyday roles, but he isn't getting them, so he needs this.
Yeah.
And like dwarfs, and they're trying to argue against it, but then everyone's just having a go at him. And I got a voice note from a really good friend of mine called Jay Luster, who's another dwarf actor, just absolutely pissing himself, going, God, you've pissed in his Cheerios, haven't you? Keep it up, you know? It's brilliant, keep it up. And it's comments like that from other dwarf actors going, yes, George, thank you. Keep it up. Come on, George. You know, and as I said, it's 2023. I know I'm going to get some backlash no matter what I do. But it's my opinion. You can't do anything. Like, is that, for example, my parents have got a lot of friends who are dwarfs who are not in the industry, and they're scared they're going to get some backlash. And the same, but what they say to them is, I'm 26. I'm allowed to have an opinion different to yours. You can't stop me saying my opinion. You can't shut me up. No matter how hard you try, I will come back fighting even harder.
It's like saying, though, like, people will, what you don't want from this, and I think I'm on the right track tonight, is like, from your argument, comment, your opinion, your story, what you don't want is for them people to go, well, if he thinks like that, everyone with dwarfism thinks like that. It's bullshit. As you say, you have your own opinion, your own story, and that's what you're doing. Is simply using your voice, like we say, and you're sharing your story. Now, the thing with, obviously, the whole Hugh Grant thing and that, obviously, the thing that's getting in my mind at the moment is that there is an argument to be made there. I'm in agreement with that, with you on that. That stuff needs to be looked at. And then I'm also, the mental health side of me is going, how is Hugh Grant feeling hearing this feedback? How is that affecting him in his mindset? Because if I put myself in his shoes and is gone, do you know what? I've been, in my mind, I've been given this role because I was the best actor on the day, let's say, for argument's sake. But now I'm getting this backlash. How does that affect me? Again, I think if we could know, I think if everyone knew the backstory of it, of was it a full casting? Was there, who was casted? How many, you know, was dwarves cast? What was they not? What was it a case of, like, right, here's a load of money, that's you in it? I think if that story was there, I think it would allow people to then make their own decisions. Whereas at the moment, again, people are seeing a one tiny clip and that's it. They're just like running into a brick wall. There's two truths to everything, and there's two sides to everything. And I think if it was a case of, as you say, like you said earlier, if it was a case of there was 100 auditions and he was genuinely the best one, then fair enough. You can't, it's, but you have to at least, We don't know if people have been allowed the option.
Yeah, but like, going back to what you're saying about one of us thinking for us all, my friend, one of my best friends, was looking at the comments and people going, yeah, but I thought Peter Dinklage said they didn't want these roles anymore. It's like, yeah, just because Peter said it doesn't mean I'm saying it. Like, people don't think because one dwarf said it, all of the dwarfs agree with them. It's like, no, we're not all the same person, you know? We're just small. Even though we're all small, we all have our own mindset, our own opinions on it. So he may not want the role. But it's like, that's what Hollywood said. Oh, one dwarf said no, so all dwarfs would say no.
I find that quite, you know, I know which interview you're on about, and I quite find that a little bit shocking, from, especially coming from Peter Dinklage, because his career has been made off, for me, two certain roles. One was Elf.
Yeah.
You know, he owned that role, you know, with the, you know, call me dwarf one more time. You know, that sticks in my head. And then the other one was Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
you know, massive sort of world renowned sort of TV program. You know, you look at the cast out on that, and his role come from, you know, his you know, so why is that being closed down to everybody else? You know what I mean? It's like
tough. He can afford to not do the roles that we need. Like, for example, Hugh Grant can afford to skip a paycheck or two. He can afford to skip a film or two, where people like us can't. And if I could chat to him and the casting director, my question would be, why? That's what I want to know. That's what I want to know more than anything, is why? And I would quite like to have a chat with him. But everyone, all the news outlets, every interview I've done, I've tried to contact Warner Brothers and him for comment. And neither of them have replied. So I'm just imagining Warner Brothers is just there like, who the bloody hell's George Coppin? And why do we keep getting asked to comment on his story? You know,
guys, welcome to the show. Hugh Grant. We can't afford that. Sorry, George. We cannot afford
that. He's been
sat
in the background. Sorry to this, George. No, we haven't really.
Let's get him on.
Yeah. Is it Peter Dinklage?
Mate, I just didn't want to say anything. Welcome to Hugh Grant.
We haven't.
No, so George, you know, yeah. Honestly, you know, we've got nobody in the background. You know, you scrap all that. But what I do want to say, George, you know, thank you so much for coming on, and you know, it has been a great conversation. You know, if somebody can want to go and watch you, you know, please do. He is genuinely a funny bloke. You know, so what have we got coming up, George? Have we got any sort of shows people can come to watch?
Yeah, I've got various comedy gigs here and now. For if anybody lives in the East Midlands, specifically Derby, I run a monthly comedy night at a place called Peacock Lounge in Park Farm in Alice Street. Absolutely beautiful. Let me get when the next date up is. Yeah, I've got if you live in Northampton, I'm there this year doing Panto. So really look forward to that one, which, as I said, absolutely love Panto. If you live in Matlock, I'm going to be in Matlock on the 13th of August at Matlock Comic Con. I do a lot of Comic Cons with my dad. Peacock's next one is 21st September. If you can't make that one, on the 2nd of November at the Peacock Lounge, I'm doing my Nottingham Comedy Festival preview, which I'm then doing the show in Nottingham Comedy Festival on the 5th of November. So if you just go to Nottingham Comedy Festival and type in George Coppin. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Coppin, Coppen 1412. I put everything on Instagram and more on there. Yeah, just follow me there.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
No, hey, 1, 4, 1, 2. We will put the links for his socials and these dates and everything we can find onto the description below. So make sure you hit the description and have a look. But yeah, George, mate, thank you so much, mate. This has been a absolute fantastic, open and frank conversation, mate.
Thank you for asking me, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, buddy. It really is appreciated.
No worries. Pleasure.
As I always end the show, stand up, speak out, and remember, use your voice.